In other words, if Trump controls the Fed, he'll end up with the opposite of what he says he seeks. Longer-term interest rates will rise. It's already starting to happen. And as longer-term rates rise, the stock market will fall. Put on your seatbelts, folks. So maybe lower interest rates isn't the real reason Trump is so intent on controlling the Fed. Money is not enough. He relishes the submission of others. He craves obsequiousness, groveling servility, and ass-kissing. He detests criticism. He wants to get even. He wants a Nobel Prize and his face carved on Mount Rushmore. His goal is to achieve, or be perceived to have achieved, omnipotence. Normal policy debates are over what's good for the public, hence public policy. But we're no longer in a world of normal policy debate. The central question inside the Oval Office and among Trump's enablers in the White House and Congress is what will enrich Trump and strengthen his dominance over everyone and everything else. The most important public policy debate we ought to be having is how to peacefully and lawfully rid America and the world of this menace.
Sway the future to the past and find what will endure.
You've been listening to Sea Change Radio. Our intro music is by Sanford Lewis, and our outro music is by Alex Wise.
Additional music by Herbie Mann, Mofro, and Fog Swamp.
Check out our website at seachangeradio.com. That's seachangeradio.com to stream or download the show or subscribe to our podcast. Visit our archives there to hear from Bill McKibben.
This is Norman Sylvester, the Boogie Cat. Meow, meow. You're listening to KBOO Portland 90.7 FM Community Radio.
Support for KBOO comes from its members and from Chasing Chimeras, the Lure of Deceptive Climate Solutions, a documentary directed by Barbara Bernstein about climate justice. Screening at Cinema 21 on September 24th at 7 p.m., the film will be followed by panel discussion with the filmmaker. More info available at chasingchimeras.org.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Have him on my whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver stream. Can't tell them apart at all. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is artist Gina Wilson. Her show Quiddity is on now through September 27th at the Russo Lee Gallery at 805 Northwest 21st Avenue. Open again. Thanks for doing Art Focus, Gina.
Thanks for coming, Joseph.
This show, Quiddity, which you define as the essence of yourself, is a mixture of 2D and 3D work. So a lot of work on paper, but that's on boards. There's some painting, bit of collage, work on fabric. And then the 3D work is in the center of the room. It's a collection of pots, ceramic pots on these white plinths. So it's just a little city in the middle of the room. And we'll start with that because, you know, this is a kind of diverse range of work, but you told me you just make whatever you want.
Yes. I allow whatever seems to be of interest to me at the moment to flourish.
So these pots are all, they're hand-built, so you didn't use a wheel. So they're mostly like tall cylindrical vases, but they're quite irregular. They lean over, they have bulges, they have rough edges. Even the holes at the top are not entirely circular. So they have very much the feel of a hand-made object. And tell us why you preferred that when making these vessels.
I think that the hand allows your humanity to come through more clearly. I think that the fact that they are made by hand allows the artist's sensibility to come through in a kind of process way, which seems important to me.
So you like, you know, a fingerprint or a dent or something. That the basic shapes are cylinders, vase kind of things. But do you expect people to put things in these, like flowers or paper clips?
Well, yes, especially in the past. At this point, one of my pieces, the bottom is cut out of it. And another piece, there's glass in the on the inside of it, making it look somewhat like a puddle of water in there. So I think that although I began very much with this idea that they were vessels, and that there was something kind of wonderful about the fact that people would handle them, and that they would be part of some sort of celebration when flowers come into the home. But at this point, I think they're becoming a bit more sculptural. There's a little bit more of a three-dimensionality to them. So they are, as we all in our own lives, I suppose, are kind of morphing and changing a bit in the show.
So the surface, what you've done with them is drawn on them with a stylus. So you etch these lines and then you fill in where you can or where you want with slip. So it's colored slip where you add like an oxide of blue. Mm-hmm. So you're painting on a kind of another layer of clay to get colors. Mm-hmm. The one we're looking at is called Nomads, and it has little red dots in it that shine out tiny, maybe 3 millimeters across. And those are glaze. But mostly you're using the kind of earth tones of the clay and then drawing on the surface. So looking at the imagery, which is all the way around this vase, I see a white shape with a face. It looks like the sun. It has rays, or it could be the moon. There's a kind of a raggedy cloud face that has an eye and a mouth. And then maybe that person has a body stretched out. There's maybe a lake and maybe a head and an arm. Somebody swimming or drowning. A flower, like a very simple flower. And as you walk around the object, you see different shapes. You see ears, could be eyes, little worm things sticking out, you know. Tell us about the imagery you use and its relation to the 3D as you walk around the object.
So one of the things that working in a three-dimensional object gives you is that multiple viewpoint. And so although there is a narrative that for me, not necessarily linear, comes and goes and changes as I work, still, as you walk around, you have many different experiences with this particular object. The recognizable objects that are in the piece are definitely stories and different sorts of narratives for me. We humans are storytellers, and I doubt that it's possible for us not to make up stories whenever we see something recognizable, or even things that are non-objective or abstract. But I am not really talking or want to reveal or want to discuss what these imagery means for me, outside of a aesthetic that I enjoy surface and I enjoy shape, because I'm not a novelist. I'm not telling you a story in a novel sort of way. I'm taking you on a different kind of journey, and it's a visual journey, and a visual journey that allows you to make narratives of your own, just like I did.
So you kind of work in both 2D and 3D, you work in a kind of borderline abstraction where you can recognize human bodies, you know, the sun, eyeballs, things like that. But there is no way you can kind of center them and make them make a lot of sense. That they, you know, like abstraction, they kind of go off into their own world. But some of the stuff is kind of clearer. Like this other ball, Gather. It's like naked bodies, headless, but there's bare bums, you know. In some of the work you see like vulvas and penises. Often the people are standing on one leg with their leg, the other leg out at 90 degrees behind them. There's people embracing here. What's the difference when you're working with the human form that in its more recognizable form?
Well, I think that the human form, for me, begins as I am trying to understand what it is to be an artist and who I, you know, what is it that I'm going to be attracted to or notice or work with, or, you know, it's such a journey. I've been doing this for over 40 years now. So I think that the source, once again, is the artist. That's the one constant in all art. And so it seemed at first as though a natural thing to begin with the figure, which is me, not literally me, as all of us, it's humans, that's what we are in this kind of a shape. And then the shapes of the body are just marvelous and, shall we dare say, beautiful in their own way. And so that subject matter has held with me as it provides me with a great deal of shapes where legs can become arms or arms are legs or arms and legs become a hand. So these shapes are something that's really very flexible and wondrous to work with.
These figures, you know, the fingers are just sticks and the feet, the bodies are kind of drawn with a ruler and maybe a compass for the curves. Why do you go for such a heavily stylized image? Is it to do with the ceramics and the way you're working, you know, at that angle and that soft material? Or is it just the way you see the human body right now?
It is quite the mystery, Joseph, as to why you're attracted to what you are. And in some ways, the greatest challenge is not to be too concerned with having to explain or validate it. I am not really sure why I love the right angle, or why I love the perfect circle, or why I love the worked surface so that my pencil drawings, you often see what I have erased. I don't want to erase it all. I like the process. And so there becomes a vulnerability, obviously, when you can't really explain why that impacts you so, and yet that is the ultimate job of all of us, is to understand what it is or who we are and to allow ourselves to flourish in that land that just feels right. I'm not really sure the explanation for it other than very satisfying.
Yeah, you said you just make whatever you want, basically. You're not thinking of the end viewer in particular. It's more like a self-expression.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, boy, not only am I not really thinking about my viewer, I just make a mark. I start with something. I don't know. It doesn't really matter what it is. And then the work leads you. The work, oh, you like that. And then you try to take something away and what you like falls apart and you try to put that back in there. And well, now we're on another journey. And why did that bother you? And you're just trying to find that moment where the piece feels like it's just as much a real being as you are. You know, like when you're at the ocean and you see 1,000 sunsets in your life, but there's like 5 of them you took a picture of. Well, why? What was it about that sunset that you took a picture this time? Well, you probably can't exactly explain it, and I'm trying to understand it for myself. And I know part of it is the shapes and the surfaces. And so it's a journey.
When someone's working on a 2D piece, they usually do sketches and mock-ups and collage and to get their ideas together before they commit. But with these in particular, do you just sit with the wet clay pot and just work on it?
Yep.
Spontaneously?
Yeah. No, there's really no planning. Even this large one, which is 70 by 110 inches.
A large painting?
The piece over there. Yeah, it's there's not a lot, there's no pre-planning. I'm stapling it up to the wall and I'm working on it, and so I just start with something that seems interesting to me and see what challenges and where it is I want to go with it. Yeah.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week is artist Gina Wilson. Gina's show Quiddity is on now at the Russo Lee Gallery on Northwest 21st Avenue through September 27th, so not long. Gina, you also work in 2D, but you also use found objects. So people are going to walk in and immediately see this wooden shape. It's like a long rectangle with a pointy bottom and two little arms and two little legs, and think, oh, it's my mom's ironing board from 70 years ago. Next to it is, you know, a red painting with white rectangles either side of that, and works on paper, human figures, you know, pencil. When you're working in 2D, what's your thinking about whether you'll use a found object, which is kind of a 3D thing, and whether you'll just go flat?
I don't think that there is any difference between the two. They are simply, I'm being led by my interest. And I think now, I've had a long conversation with this idea of what the heck beauty is. What do we mean by that? And I'm not sure I really could give you any definition yet. When you look it up in the dictionary, mm-hmm. I used to collect dictionaries, especially old ones, just to look for their definition. And usually it was of beauty. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it usually would say, beauty like a woman. And I'm like, what the heck does that even mean? So, but I think now that I'm beginning to see why art has for a long time tried to define and been discussing and this whole issue of beauty. But even today, if you look it up on Merriam-Webster's dictionary, you're going to see definition number 2, beauty, like a woman. And I'm like, but I think that there is something that once again caused you to take that picture of that particular sunset. Or when you're in a walk in the forest and you stop because... why? Could it be that B word? You know, there's something that is similar in that that I recognize as a guide in the work.
So Gina, these look, you know, if you walked in, you might think, well, this is a show of like early 20th century art. You know, this looks a little bit like Braque or Picasso or, you know, some from Bauhaus. Lots of collage-y bits, straight lines, rough surfaces as they try and break with, you know, the perfection of classical art. You're not just trying to make beautiful compositions. Are you working with some other kind of beauty?
There's a cultural standard to beauty. And yes, indeed, I am not very interested in that. But I am interested in my own concept of what seems beautiful to me. So that's a visual thing, just like we were talking before about the sunset and why I'm taking a picture now or stopping on this part in the forest. But there's also a beauty to, you know, certain people that are interesting to be around. There's also a beauty to mathematics and ideas. And, you know, I'm as interested and enjoy looking at paintings as I do Maria Abakanovich, you know, and her just amazingly strange performance artist work. So all of these people are showing me avenues of potential, but the concept of, we're going to call this beauty, although I feel like I'm on a tightrope using this word, is my own sense of it, and which encompasses partly process. I like marks of process in part because they show the way life was created here on the earth. I mean, evolution needed process. Evolution is process. There's a beauty to you seeing how something was made in parts of it. You know, things are erased, but not completely. Mm-hmm.
For instance, the ironing board, you've just left the wooden surface as is. It's kind of worn. There are little scorch marks. You can see kind of a checkered pattern. And you left it, I guess you use it because it looks like a person. But you kind of just stuck it on the wall with a red circle. Next to it is a very abstract piece called Sail Near the Wind. And it's mixed media on board. I think he painted on paper in red. He's some black lines with circles. And then there's this white rectangle. And it looks like it has two legs. I guess there are shoes on it. But it's made up of tiny little pieces of text. So if you had a magnifying glass, you could see it's handwriting. But very small, like one page is about an inch tall. What is that text?
Well, the text is from my journals. So I copied pages and then reduced the size and then reduced the size and then reduced the size until it just becomes surface. You know, it's a surface texture in a way, I suppose, so that you have no idea what it was. You know, you as well, Joseph, recognize that it was writing of some sort. It doesn't really matter what the writing was of. You know, here's a figure that's covered with bits of writing. And so there's something beautiful about that idea of it to me, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Here I am.
Do you read your old journals?
Yeah, I do. And I have many of them. I'm definitely a person who writes to myself, trying to figure things out in life.
It's a good way of figuring out your thought, but then, like, what do you do with them all? Mine are in just a giant box.
Yeah, well, you've got to have directions that they are burned the minute you die.
I do some pre-burning. Yeah. Just to continue on this wall, you know, you've got a framed drawing. It looks like black ink and pencil, a kind of a hand holding two more of your square figures, or maybe one, and then next to it is a more elaborate piece, and it's the same one or two people, almost like wrestling, legs, feet in the air, leaning on the edge, like they're on the edge of a cliff on a white background. So these are you playing with the same idea, but in very different media, it looks to me. Do you make these all at the same time, or are these different parts of your two-year process?
I'm somebody who goes into my studio pretty much every day from 11 to 7. It's my schedule. And things are started. And then you come to a point where you're not really sure what you're doing, so kind of blind to the work. And so it gets set aside. The works in this show have all been manipulated within the last 2 years. It doesn't mean they've all been started within the last 2 years. One piece, the bottom half of it, was probably started about 5 years ago, and it was a piece of paper I just put in my drawer. I like it, but I don't know what to do with it. And so all of these works, I work on many different pieces at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
I find being able to turn it to the wall and leave it alone for a while, and I look at it anew, helps me. And yet other pieces, and there's one up on the landing, which is a line drawing that resolved itself quickly. It's very simple. So, you know, do you start something and finish it right away? Yes. Do you start something and it takes you 10 years to finish it? Yes. Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes 2 years, sometimes right away.
So, Gina, the two biggest pieces are maybe, you know, 6 by 6 feet, and the other one's even bigger. The fabric, sort of cotton, you know, sort of unbleached cotton, very thin, stretched, and then there are lots of rough kind of paint marks on them, like different colors, little patches, like seeping kind of shape, you know, like leaking. And then you've sewn by hand in these simple running stitches in the red and blue, the outlines of people, and they're the same people with the sort of straight legs. Some of them are, well, in this case, shift, they're doubled over. And explain about the fabric and where these background kind of colored marks come from.
My mom is a silkscreen printer of fabrics. And so when you're printing fabric with a silkscreen, you need something that soaks up the dye so that it doesn't puddle and obscure the pattern that your screen is. So she would put probably 8 layers of muslin down on the table and then the piece that she's printing. And as a child, I was always, and continued on to feel like, I really like these under fabrics. Not that her intended work was bad. It was all very fine. But perhaps as a firstborn, I'm looking at something different than my mom. But so this fabric is also a found object. So this is, they both started as one of these under layers of fabric. And although not all of the marks of color on there are from her printing, I've kind of had my way with it. But that's where it started from. And then embroidered on it and embroidered some of the colors differently. And so it's, yeah.
So where there were little splotches, maybe 2-inch square of light green, you went in with embroidery, sort of a golden thread or a silver thread, and obscured it, but you can kind of see the ink through it. And you said you were working on the legs and you were going to clear them out and make them just white. But then you didn't. You left some of the ink behind.
So every piece in the show is a work in process. So I have an idea and I start, and then what is visually happening is going to alter what I'm doing. Very seldom do I go in a straight line. I just remember as a student, Solowit saying, you have to complete every idea as you have it. You know, and I'm like, but then, you know, you have seen enough art and you have grown in your awareness to know that that is one avenue. And this is, generally speaking, not my avenue. I am very much a process-oriented artist. So things that I began with the idea change due to aesthetic response.
And you leave the change visible?
Sometimes, yeah. Definitely. Not always. It's all going to be contingent on my aesthetic experience of the piece. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm going for, is what my, what does that piece invoke in me now, you know? And pretty much anything in there is fair game to come or go based on that.
The biggest piece in the show is another one of these fabric taken from screen printing. So that has the marks and splotches, and then you've drawn two figures, and they seem to be standing one in front of the other, arms out, legs out. So the ones on shift, they could have been like businessmen on fentanyl. That's people in suits doubled over, and that strange thing you see. What is it about the people here? They seem to be maybe dancing or playing, and why is it titled that?
I would say that our response to any kind of a narrative element in there is really our own. So I probably have not much to say about what the narrative is going on in there, and allowing that to be something that is each of ours, and also that you might come back in a week and look at it and notice something different.
Is that the value of art now, that we all have to make our own meaning?
I think art has all kinds of meaning for us. Mostly, it is a way to touch our own humanity. And I really feel as though everybody should have something made by hand in their home, you know, just to remind yourself of, you know, not things that are made by machines, you know, just something to regain that sense of humanity that's, I think, that art provides for us.
My name's Joseph Gallivan. You've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guest this week was artist Gina Wilson. Her show Quiddity is on now through September 27th at the Russo Lee Gallery at 805 Northwest 21st Avenue. Thanks very much for doing Art Focus for the first time, Gina.
Well, thank you, Joseph, for coming, and thank your audience for listening.
Andy, whoa, whoa, looks a scream. Have him on my whoa, whoa, whoa. Andy, whoa, whoa, silver scream. Can't tell them apart at all.
Estás sintonizando KBOO Portland, tu radio comunitaria a través del 90.7 FM KBOO Portland y en línea a través de KBOO.fm.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo.